You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. One of the most controversial chapters in Detroit history is named STRESS. It's an acronym for Stop the Robberies and Enjoy Safe Streets. This Detroit Police decoy unit operated from 1971 until it was eliminated by Mayor Coleman Young in 1974. The stories from the STRESS years are dark and they're violent, and that is the focus of an award-winning documentary film, Detroit Under STRESS.
His last words were, "Oh, no," and I shot him right in the chest.
Black men were being hunted down. They were shooting them dead on the street.
The news media would blow everything that happened at STRESS out of proportion and made us feel like we were mass murderers.
They were judge, jury, and executioner.
We knew that if one of our guys got shot even, or killed, the other guy was gonna go down.
Detroit police had killed more people per capita than any other city in this country. And those people were black.
It was a terror unit.
STRESS operated with impunity.
Its producer and director, David Van Wee, grew up in Detroit, and as we're about to hear, has a very close connection to this story. I spoke with him earlier this year, and let's revisit that conversation now. Start by telling us, David, how you discovered the story of the STRESS units.
Yeah, well, a full disclosure. So my father was one of the STRESS officers that was involved in the decoying and the decoy crew with Ray Peterson. And when I grew up, my father did not wear a uniform, and I had no idea what he did. I was told that he worked for the city. And so, you know, as you get older, you get little bits and pieces. And I remember specifically when I was in college, I was in ROTC, and we're driving. I wanted to practice shooting. So my father takes me to the gun range, and as we're driving there, he brought his .357. And as I'm holding the gun, I see there's notch marks in the bottom of his gun. And I turned to my father and I said, Dad, why are there notch marks in the bottom of your gun? And he turns to me and he says, why the hell do you think there are notch marks in the bottom of my gun? And so, of course, you take that in a little bit. And as a 18, 19-year-old, you kind of go, oh, my gosh. And then you get these little tiny bits and pieces of stories. And when about 5 years ago when we were in Detroit, I finally asked my father, I heard he was in this unit called STRESS. And I said, what is this STRESS unit? What is it all about? And he finally sat down and he told me the whole story of STRESS, and I about fell over in my chair. I just couldn't believe what had happened, what the unit did, consequences of that unit. It was incredible. And I said, oh my gosh, Dad, you know, we got to share this story. And of course he gave me that sideways glance and said, nobody's talking to you, including me. But over time, it took me about a year. When my father finally agreed to be interviewed by me, it started to open the door to some of the other people in that unit. He was able to get me in touch with several people, including Ray Peterson.
Yeah, now Ray Peterson is the name you mentioned, and he's important because?
So Ray Peterson's important because he was involved in 9 of the fatal shootings. He was the decoy crew. It was STRESS Crew 1. Now, STRESS was made up of more than just decoy. It was about 100 guys. But only 20 of them did the decoy work because it was insanity. You're going to these police officers and you're saying, look, we want you to volunteer for this STRESS unit. There'll be no extra pay, but here's what we want you to do. We want you to go dressed as plain clothes and go into the worst parts of Detroit. We want you to wander around, pretend to be drunk, pretend to be lost. We want you to try and get robbed. And then when the robber comes up and he's face to face with you, we want you to arrest him. But don't worry, you're going to have 2 to 3 guys backing you up. Now, they'll be 100 yards away, but they'll come and help you as soon as something bad happens. I mean, can you imagine being asked to do something like this? And these guys volunteered to do it.
And what was happening if we're thinking of Detroit and what we see in your film, in Detroit in early 1971, this is 3.5 years after the big racial explosion, the rebellion of 1967. So what was going on with crime in Detroit that caused the DPD to say, we need to do this?
That's a great question. And it's so important and vital to this story because so many people forget about what it was like in Detroit in 1970. you had a murder rate that was up 300% from a decade earlier, and you had a robbery rate that was up 600% from a decade earlier. And the problem was, is when they were robbing you, in all likelihood, they were going to kill you because they didn't want a witness. And so the police show up, and you've got a dead body and no witnesses. Now what do you do? So the chief at the time, his name was Chief Nichols, got his crew together along with a guy named Inspector Bannon, and they decided that they wanted to start doing this proactive policing. This is where they were going to go out and try and find these guys who were doing these crimes and arrest them. But, of course, the problem was when you have a gun to your head and a knife to your stomach and you're being robbed, do you wait to get shot? You mean, cause, and again, they have to wait until they actually get robbed. So they can't make the arrest until the robbery happens. But after the robbery, in all likelihood, you're going to get shot. And so the stress officers, of course, start shooting first. And it causes a big uproar in the city as it continues. And it was just a horrible position to put these police officers in. But at the same time, something had to be done.
And how effective was stress, David? What happened to Detroit's crime rate over those 2 or 3 years that it was in operation?
So stress was extraordinarily effective. Death is always a great deterrent. And when you've got these criminals out there and they start realizing and seeing what's happening with stress, then you watch the robbery rate start to plummet. And the murder rate, however, continues to climb. But they were extraordinarily successful in creating a decrease in the robbery rate. But with anything else, there are consequences to that.
Yeah. At what social cost? What about police citizen killings? What happened in Detroit there?
After the first year of stress, Detroit is the number one city where civilians are getting killed. But it's also the number one city where police are getting killed. So it really had consequences on both sides. And a lot of people forget that as well. They look at the 26 fatal shootings, which, of course, you know, are a consequence of that. But they forget about all the police officers that were not only killed, but the ones that were, you know, brutally shot that survived.
When you stop and you think about that evolving and then Coleman Young running for mayor in Detroit in 1973, promising to eliminate the stress units, and he's elected and he does. What happened to crime then?
Here's the interesting thing. So when Coleman Young's whole platform was to disband stress, stress was very unpopular at that point in 1973. The black community felt disenfranchised. You know, remember looking at history, 1964, you have the civil rights movement, but Detroit doesn't change. It stays the same. There's still an incredible amount of racism. There's still an incredible amount of pushing the black community into these two sections of the city called Black Bottom and Paradise Valley, where it's, you know, high rent, bad conditions. And so it's kind of this tinderbox that happens. And the communities continues to be outraged. And so Coleman Young steps in, sees it as an opportunity, and says, look, we're going to disband the stress unit. So in 1974, when he wins the election, he disbands stress, and the crime rate goes all the way back up to pre-stress levels. It was almost like he was giving the city a pass. And not only that, what was really interesting is that Coleman Young's personal security were all stress officers. He moved them from stress to his personal security.
When you think of the officers, you say there was about 100 in the unit, only about 20 or so actually acted as decoys. So who volunteered? And I'm wondering particularly any officers of color?
There was. So Stress actually had a black decoy crew called Stress Crew 7, and it was made up of 3 African-American men who volunteered for the unit, and they would, of course, go out and do the same thing. Now, what was interesting about Stress as well is that within the police department at that time, racism was rampant. It was horrible. There were guys that were getting assigned a African-American partner, and they were putting up a piece of cardboard in their car between them.
Yeah, we actually heard that story from former Detroit Police Chief Ike McKinnon, and he described what it was like for him as a rookie officer, and it absolutely fit with that. He even had weapons drawn on him as a police officer heading home during the rebellion of 67. That is, yeah, we certainly explored that. So what was the result then of having that stress unit operating? How did that impact racism in the department?
So what's interesting is that within the stress unit itself, there really was no racism. They really worked together well, and they worked together as a unit. And even though they had specific missions and targeted areas where sometimes they would only use, you know, the African-American crew, and then the white crew would go to somewhere else, they would mix and they would, you know, pair up for certain decoy missions and so forth. And so I think it was a very different level of policing, almost like men who join the military and are in combat together. Because really, when you look at Detroit at that time, really was almost a combat zone.
So crime goes down while the stress units are on the streets. Crime goes back up, rebounds, ricochets back up when it was eliminated. So were law-abiding citizens hurt by the units, or were they hurt when the units were disbanded?
So, you know, it depends on your view, of course. The black community living in Detroit has every right to be upset. The racism and the way that they were treated was horrific. At the same time, I'll tell you a quick story about, you know, a cousin of my father's. Her name was Roberta, and she was deaf. And she wanted to live in the city. She loved the vibe of the city. She loved the culture. And so she moved into the city. And as she's coming home late one night, she comes in the house. And what she doesn't hear is that there's two people that are robbing her house. And as she comes in, they brutally attack her and kill her. My father went to the scene, and he said that there was blood everywhere. He said she put up a hell of a fight, but they killed her. Now, was my family concerned about the people that were there bombing it? Were they hurt by this? Absolutely. You know, did they care what the economic circumstances were of the people that were in there robbing them? Not at that point, because it's personal. So if you're one of the people that's been attacked, or you're one of the people that's been robbed, or one of your family members has been killed, you're extraordinarily upset that stress isn't there. If you're on the other side of the issue, and you're upset at the amount of shootings that are happening by police against the African-American communities, then for you, it's a different take. So, and that's why this is so controversial, right? It's so difficult to come up with the right solution, because when you have such an aggressive and proactive policing solution, you're going to have consequences that are going to be impactful to people on the other side, right? Because the people that they shot, even though they were robbing someone or committing crimes, they have families as well. And so it's a very tough situation.
How did your dad feel about the film once he saw it all done?
You know, my dad's a very hard man, as you can imagine. And when you hear some of the things that he did in the film, you kind of get a different flavor of maybe how I grew up. He never beat us. He didn't hit us. But he was, you know, he was a hard man. And when I first made my first cut of this film, I wanted to run it by him, of course. And I thought, oh, my God, he's going to, because we do show both sides. You know, we have Mayor Kenneth Cockrell, who was mayor of Detroit previously, Ron Scott, who was not only involved in the anti-stress movement, but has been an advocate against police brutality all of his life. Melba Boyd, who was related to three men who were basically at war with stress and were shooting stress officers, and tells her side of the story. And so, you know, you have these things in the film that relay both sides. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, he's just going to tear this apart. He's going to be angry. He sat down and watched the whole film, didn't say a word. And when it ended, you know, I just looked over and I said, Dad, what did you think? And he just looked at me and he said, that's good. I said, that's it? He's like, yeah. He said, you told the whole story. And I said, you know, you're not upset at anything. You don't want to change anything. And he says, nope. He goes, that's what happened. And that was it. And, you know, and he's talking about, you know, some of the, you know, pretty bad things he did. And I think a lot of these guys, now that they're getting older, realize that this was their chance to tell their story. And so they really opened up, you know, especially, you know, Ray Pearson. Jesus, that was an incredible interview. And talk about a hard man. I tell people, regardless of whether you were a good guy or a bad guy, you did not want to come across Ray Pearson. He's not the guy you wanted to interact with at all.
Was he the commander, stress commander?
he was what they called the crew chief of Stress Crew One. He was one of the first people that they brought in. And you know, back in that time too, you know, you had the supervisors were all World War II guys. And then the stress officers were, most of them were Korean, Vietnam vets. So, you know, you have these, you know, people that have been involved in war and those type of strategies, and they're bringing them to the police department. That was another reason why, you know, it was so aggressive, was because the people that were running it were all military guys, really. And the people that were, you know, on the ground had been through Vietnam. So, you know, they wanted to go home at night.
David, I know you've screened the film across the country, and by the way, you've racked up a number of awards. What kind of audience reactions are you getting? What kind of comments?
It's all across the same thing. It's all across the board. We've had people walk out of the theater because they're furious about it. We've had people walk up and say, you know, thank you so much for finally letting the police officers have a voice. Because what's interesting about this as well is that typically we never hear from the police officer. And remember, the stress guys haven't talked to anybody in almost 50 years. We've never heard from them. And that's another thing that makes this so compelling, is you finally see the impact that this type of work had on them and the impact of on their side of having their friends and their fellow officers killed. And we kind of forget that piece. It's very easy to get into the narrative that, you know, that these were just white racist killers out to kill black people. You know, was there some racism involved? Did they do horrible things? Sure there was, absolutely. But I also think it's a product of what they were sent to do. And so the audiences have been great. There's only been one that they had to shut down in Connecticut because it got a little heated. But beyond that, people have been very respectful. Everybody has shared their views on both sides. And it really, the purpose of the film is to continue that conversation about how do we solve this crime, because it's happening right now in Chicago.
Well, as you pose the question in the trailer to your film, how do you stop crime in a city out of control?
Yes, and if you listen to what Rahm Emanuel's statement was, well, we just need to instill more values and more morals. Well, that's great, but that's going to take quite a while to start turning that if that's necessarily what needs to be done. How do you help those families today?
The film is Detroit Under Stress, and David Van Wee is producer-director. David, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Stateside's executive producer is Joe Lindstroth. Contributors are Mike Blank, Mercedes Mejia, Lindsay Scullin, April Van Buren, Sam Corey, Joey Horan, Sarah Leeson, Bella Isaacs, and Natalie Brennan. Stateside is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm Cynthia Canty. Thank you so much for listening.